Welcome to episode 5 of the Dulu Show. Today we have our very first Bulgarian guest on the podcast. The very first guest on the Dulu Show. We had a friend earlier.
Doesn't count.
Doesn't count. We're not friends here.
I thought you were friends already.
That's true. Actually, that's true.
We failed. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Cut it off.
But Nicola, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, hi everyone. I'm Nicola. As you guys already mentioned, I just turned 26 6 days ago.
Congrats.
And currently, I am in charge of Aesthetic by Science. These are our T-shirts, and this was the first evidence-based fitness and nutrition website in Bulgaria. Probably not the first, let's put it like that, but the first that was devoted only to this sort of in-depth fitness information that was evidence-based, and it's geared towards intermediaries, advanced people, the guys that are in the gym that, you know, they want to take it to the next level, but they don't know how. You know, that's what separates the intermediates from, you know, people that go on stage. And there was really a huge gap and a lot of misinformation, even for general health. So it kind of grew over to more general articles, not the in-depth type. And we're doing a bunch of things. Like this project started as a website, but we've got our own YouTube. We're producing a lot of cool content. We're working with Reebok on a bunch of different projects. We're doing our own t-shirts and also training gear. So we have small microplates from 100 to 500 grams that people can use in their workouts, and it's hugely beneficial, but no need to go in depth. And we're also creating our own protein bars, as I think I mentioned to you guys. So we've been dealing with a lot of stuff. It's not something that we anticipated. It was just kind of something that the market demanded, and it's more of a pull kind of thing, not a push. We don't want to push anything. It was just, we're just following orders, let's just say it like that.
When did you guys start, and what was the first product that you kind of started with?
First product, well, we started 30th of November 2015. That's when we launched our website, and our first product was last summer when we just made 50 t-shirts that are really crappy, and it took us 1 year to kind of pick that up again and do another batch that is actually nice, make a website and everything else that goes with it. But you know, it was just something that it was never intended to be a business. It's not intended to be a business right now as well. It's just that our fan base grew and people were so passionate about what we've been doing, and people have been so supportive that they actually want the t-shirt to say, hey, I'm one of those guys, you know, the evidence-based guys. So it's been really cool to see so many people involved in this movement and trying to, you know, educate others as well, because they've tried what we've been telling people, which is the opposite, more or less, of what your typical bodybuilding gym pro would tell you. And it works so well that people were getting passionate, and, you know, they want to share this knowledge. They want to help their friends and family improve. So it's been absolutely amazing.
And so by evidence-based, because that might be a new concept for some people, what exactly is the kind of the definition of evidence-based advice?
That's a really good question, even for people that do know what, or they think they know what evidence-based means. So it might sound even a bit arrogant that someone like me would say it, because evidence in the sense of nutrition, exercise science, is actually information that has been confirmed and validated through research. And I'm not a researcher. I'm far from it. There's people that have been studying, you know, biology, biochemistry, biomechanics, everything. They've devoted their lives to being academics, to studying these topics. So I wouldn't say that I myself am a researcher. I'm definitely not. What I aspire to be is an educator. And what I want to do is share to our audience what has been shared with me from the people that are actual researchers. So I do follow them around. I have an academic background. I actually studied in Rotterdam, pretty close to where you guys are situated right now. So I had my bachelor and my master's there. I studied finance, to be honest. And finance is, at least my program was really academic. So we did some research. We looked at a lot of research. So the whole concept is more or less the same, even though the field is different. You just use different tools, but the basic concept of methodology, why study design is important, the critical thinking concept is the same. So it, for me, it wasn't difficult to jump into this evidence-based fitness and try to translate this information to the regular person. And again, it's difficult for a person to say they're an evidence-based practitioner without having a negative connotation associated with this label, but I would say that I am, or at least that I aspire to be.
Mm-hmm. Cool stuff. How did the idea for the company come about?
It wasn't an idea for a company. I basically met Stan, which is the other guy, one of the other guys that we're doing this whole thing with, because I was taking a course by a Dutch guy. Again, we're following the Netherlands today as a team, but he's really, really amazing. His name is Menno Henselmans, and I was doing my own, you know, reading of academic papers beforehand. I was into the evidence-based sphere, but the thing is, it's really hard to synthesize this entire pool of this enormous amount of information and to put it in a system that is coherent and it works, because there are still a lot of contradictions. And what Menno does and what his course has achieved is that he has managed somehow, he's a mad scientist, to basically crunch up everything that is important, put it in a certain context, because context is the most important thing. Without context, you're just saying things that might be right under some circumstances and wrong under others. So without context, you have nothing. So he has put everything into context for different kind of people. He goes not only through the nutrition and exercise science stuff, but he also goes really deep into personal development, really deep into psychology. So it's really everything you need to know. It's a great, great toolkit. Of course, you might want to expand, but anyway, I was taking this course just for myself because I wasn't getting the results that I wanted, even though it was way better than my bro science times. And at that point, I got contacted by a friend, and she told me, you know, there's this guy I know that he wants to take this course that you're doing right now. Can you guys connect, and can you please explain to him what you've been studying? So that's how I met Stan. It was basically over Facebook. And, you know, I don't know how you guys came to be, how you guys met and created your company, but with us it was just like, it's not something you've been looking for, but you know you found the right thing, you know? Mm-hmm. You found a similar person to you that has absolutely the same interests, shares the same passion for fitness. And we took it from there. We couldn't stop talking about this and that. Everything sucks, you know, the level of information in Bulgaria. So I told him, listen, man, he was doing videos on Vbox. This is kind of like the Bulgarian YouTube, but it sucks. So he was doing videos in Vbox with, you know, with his phone on two cups. It was really, really basic, but it was all about the content. It was all about the information. That's the value. At least it was at that point. So basically, I told him, listen, man, you need a website. You know, people do watch videos, but you also need web presence, because in this entire, you know, gigantic pool of videos, people will watch your video once, especially in a platform like Vbox. You know, YouTube is a search engine as well, or at least a larger one, so it's a bit different. You can get ranked in Google. But with Vbox, you have no chance. So basically, when you do one video, 10,000 people watch it now, and after 1 year, it would still remain at 10,000 views. It's not like YouTube. So I was like, you need a website, you need presence, you need to pop up when someone searches for, you know, the 90-day diet or some other crap like that. So you can actually teach people something that's valuable. And he was like, yeah, I'll do it, but you have to do it with me. I can't do it alone. And I was like, okay. I was really kind of the introvert type of guy where I wanted to just write and not have my name known even. I really strayed away from attention. But then he kind of persuaded me, you know, little by little to get this rolling. We started in August of 2015. We launched our website on November. And it wasn't really a company. It was just doing it because no one else was. We were doing everything just because we wanted to get this information out. Because we've been hurt multiple times by the things that people say. And, you know, every journalist is trying to sell you some bullshit. Like today I just read a piece that said that eating one egg a day is the same like smoking five cigarettes. And this is not even comparable, but you can imagine it's total crap. So stuff like that makes people go crazy. I was crazy. I had an eating disorder, and I kind of screwed up my life at that point. It was really shitty. I'm not gonna lie. So I wanted to put real information out that's evidence-based. You know, this thing is validated by researchers. It's not something that this guy in the gym that's super jacked will tell you. It's actual stuff that works. It's been proven to work. It's like gravity. It's not something someone will tell you, oh, this is, you know, my grandma told me this recipe. No, this is theory that has been confirmed. It actually works. I wanted to get this information out, Stan as well, to protect people from making our mistakes, to, you know, expose charlatans, because there's a lot of them that try to sell bullshit products. And we're just writing articles, man. It was super fun. It was very stressing because you were working two jobs at that point. One, trying to develop this company, or this website rather, and our day jobs, which was serious. I was working at Microsoft at that point, 10 hours a day. It was stressful, and still trying to juggle, you know, relationships with all of that. It was difficult. And at one point people were like, do you guys do coaching? And they're like, no. And I'm like, I really want to get coached by you guys. You guys seem to know what you're doing. Because I started coaching Stan, started prepping him for a show. He looked really good. I also helped out some other friends, him as well. But we weren't doing this as a business. And really thought about it. We took a whole bunch of people at first, entirely for free, just to see if we're fit. Because don't want to, you know, do something that is total crap. We don't want to do a crap job. We want to do a really good job, and then start thinking if we have a business case. So yeah, we validated that we have a really good business case because all of our clients started making exceptional transformations, you know. And we're not the types of guys to put those shitty transformations online that, you know, you see one guy has completely changed the way he looks, because this is a lot of, there's a lot of, I don't want to say deception, but details that people don't get. You can put your most genetically gifted client out there, and of course they're going to make amazing progress. But what we saw as the value is the change in the way people think. So people started putting less importance on stuff like, oh, do I have abs? And actually trying to prioritize everything. Okay. I enhance my life. I sleep better. I eat better. I feel better. I'm better in school. I'm better in uni. I'm better at work. This is awesome. I don't want abs anymore. I just want to feel good, to retain this. You know, my relationships are getting better. So this is the value for us. This is what we've been focusing. Of course, we do have people that go on stage, nowadays at least. And then, yeah, it's all history from there. Basically, we registered a company, started taking online clients, and it kind of grew exponentially.
No, I was really impressed because I first saw you guys on YouTube. I landed on your YouTube channel, and I was really impressed by the kind of translating the model that we usually see with all the YouTubers, which are usually from the States. And I saw that you guys really used that model and implemented it really well in a Bulgarian context. So can you please tell us more about how you go about social media and like distributing all your content, what you're doing now, what do you think the kind of the future trends are going to be and how you're going to prepare for that as well?
Sure. It's actually really interesting because at first we, of course, we wanted to just write articles about things that we think are important or things that are fun. But of course, your audience is not always going to agree with you. You know, I might think that something is super important and that the way I've written it is really awesome. And this was my first mistake. I wrote a 5-piece article that was 12,000 words long, and it was really academic with like a shit ton of references, you know, really complicated talk. And then no one was reading it ever because it's just such a dense thing to read. And we quickly understood that you have to use simpler words, and that, you know, this was me being insecure, you know, trying to sound important, to sound complex. It's not something I'm afraid to say, but then we realized, okay, people are not going to read this really dense stuff. We actually, what our job is while we're doing it, is to make it easy for people to understand this evidence-based information, to translate it literally from academic to human, and then, you know, help them apply it. Because without application, without context, you just have information. And just having information is useless. You just know a bunch of things, but you can't do anything with it. So we started, you know, making our articles more readable, optimizing on-page SEO, stuff like that. But then, you know, still no one was reading it because you weren't that famous. So we started targeting keywords for stuff that has a lot of hits, that's relevant to what you wanted to do. And I think our first huge hit was ranking on the word diet, just because I wrote this really, really nice piece called The Best Diet Ever, which sounds really clickbaity, and it is, to be honest. But it was just, you know, it's not a formula. That's how I start the article. It's explaining the basics that will work no matter which diet you choose. So there's some bad diets, there's a lot of good diets, and it's all specific to the individual, to the goals. So really put it in perspective, put it into context, and gave, you know, I think 6 tips on how to select, you know, and refine what your diet should look like. And this went viral. People started liking it. We did some SEO. We started writing similar pieces, or at least mixing them with whatever we thought it was fun to write about. And at some point we saw that actually, although people would stay quite a long time on our website, you know, the average time on page was around 7 minutes, which is, that's quite a lot. Yeah, that's better than most most news websites. We still saw that people would prefer video. And we started doing YouTube. And that's when really it kicked off, because I would say that video is the next thing. Live streaming is the next thing, although it's already here. And it's something that everyone does because it's just that easy. But, you know, we started focusing on video content because it seemed that that's what people would like to receive more of. We still wrote articles, but it was just, you know, we have the exposure now. So we started writing whatever we seem is fun, whatever we thought is relevant. You know, there's some concepts that people don't know exist, so they can't search for it. So it's not favorable in terms of SEO, but it's really important for people to know about it. So we started focusing on these things, which is taking us closer to our roots. Although I think I can stand by every article I've ever written and stand as well, is we really, really focus on quality. It probably takes between 12 and 30 hours to write a really, really good piece, to take care of all the literature, read it. You know, people don't realize this, but we're not always looking at the site we're talking about. There's always a position, but we always look at, you know, the people that are the researchers that are in favor of a certain hypothesis and those that reject it. And we kind of look at the entire picture, but we cut out, you know, whatever we seem that doesn't fit the model right now. which seems like cherry picking, but we're not just cherry picking to support our theories. We're looking at everything, and then we decide, okay, we've read everything. What seems to be the truth? Okay, this is it. Let's focus on that part. So you can say it's still a form of cherry picking, and it probably is, but we're trying to make the best out of it and not clutter everything with, you know, with a lot of useless information, at least in our opinion. So the studies that are not designed well or that, you know, have methodological flaws, even though they prove a hypothesis to be right. So we just get the cream of the crop and present the information. But anyway, not to go off topic, Facebook has always been there. You know, it's a huge platform, but Snapchat has been really useful at one point, up until Instagram straight out copied the stories thing. And now I think Snapchat's dead. But, you know, I'm not Gary Vee, so I can't say. So we've been focusing a lot on video. And the format at first was that we just shoot talking head videos where you just explain a concept. It's exponentially transformed into having, you know, screenshots. We always try to make it better and better and better and better. But we also saw that, okay, our audience is not that big. You know, everyone that already knows about us, they've been hearing the same things over and over again. There's nothing new. You know, it's fitness is boring, to be honest. It's not what people think, that, you know, I have a secret that I don't share with anyone, and then when you become my client, I tell you about it and you make this transformation. It's 90% of the results are sticking to the basics, and these basics are really, really simple. They're not sexy. It's been proven like 50 years ago. People have been knowing what to do. It's just that they're not, their lifestyle is not optimized to follow these regimens. But anyway, we went into more this lifestyle vlogging sort of thing, where we try to, you know, show what it is to do outside of the gym, what you need to do outside of the gym, to basically either have fun or support your goals in the gym, or just what life looks like for someone like me or someone like Stan. Because people are interested, you know, they think some of them might think that, you know, we just sit around all day. We just read stuff and then we just eat bland chicken breast with brown rice and then we get all checked. It's kind of, you have your good days, you have your bad days. You're trying to show that, you know, it's a balancing act. It's not just, you know, repeating the same thing every day in the hopes that something does. You're also trying to show that, you know, it takes time to adjust. You know, it's not always the same. If you're not adjusting constantly, whatever's not working, you're not making progress. Sometimes you might need to adjust for like once in 5 months, but sometimes you might need to shift things around quite often. So I went to this entire sphere of lifestyle vlogging, mixing it with this useful information, still providing some pretty cool stuff as info to our new audience. But you know, people actually want to see these lifestyle types of vlogs. And of course, the aspiration was, how can we make this better, you know, instead of having just one static scene and have five more of those that last 2 minutes and you're just talking to your plate of food, which is really boring. We started trying to make cool edits. We're just improving this craft of making videos, and we started really, really liking it. So now we're investing even more, getting the basics of gear that we need. We're hiring people that are helping us film this content to edit it. And what the future looks for us is that we're probably going to start an English channel sometime soon, because we saw that, you know, even in the YouTube fitness realm, you have those guys that are just giving evidence-based information on this side, and they never seem to change. Never try to put more effort into making those videos appealing to people that would actually watch them just because they're cool, which is not a bad reason. But if you mix in some cool information inside, you might make your videos more interesting to even more people. And then you have those guys that do really cool lifestyle vlogs. They're showing the YouTube fitness glamour and stuff, but then they're they're not really into the evidence-based thing. So some stuff they say is good, some stuff they say is total bullshit. But, you know, I still like those guys. I like both type of guys. And there's, you know, a thing in the middle which you can be. I think some people are starting to fill that void, but I still think that there's more room for more information to be added, room for a few more YouTubers to take this niche. And it's not about even taking the niche, but we're mainly doing it because we like it. Mm. It's just super cool. I'm not gonna lie. I just want to make cool videos. I want to see if I can reach to a lot more people. I want to, you know, do something that someone hasn't done before. And that's the main driver, you know? Right. I think I didn't answer your question in precision, because you asked, you know, about strategies that you're using, stuff like that, but...
No, not necessarily. You actually had a very nice and complete answer. What's your division now that you said you started with writing, you now transitioned more into video, but what are you doing right now? How are you balancing the two different types of content? And what's your frequency of publishing new stuff?
Yeah, so at first you were doing like an article every 2 weeks, but if you're working at the time, it was really difficult to produce a quality content. And now basically we have, I think, 40 articles on our website. Not even 40, to be honest. It's probably something like 30, but it doesn't matter. Our goal was with articles was never to have quantity. It was to have quality. So I have articles that go up to 6,000 words. I'm actually wrote an article that is, I think, quarter of the way finished, and it's 12,000 words. So it's really exhaustive. And we are huge fans of guys like Brian Dean. I don't know if you guys heard of him.
No.
Okay, he's an amazing SEO specialist. So he has this technique called the skyscraper, where you basically, instead of, you know, those articles that are kind of lists that go like 7 tips that you should do whatever. So the concept is that instead of just providing 7 of those on a certain topic, let's say the topic is the top exercises to work your back, the guy would give you like a list of 150, like everything he can think of. And in this way, you have something that is so valuable because no one needs to click anywhere else that Google prioritizes it. And and in the long term, it would rank really, really high and really, really well. And this is sort of a long form content that is written that is really, really detailed. And there's a lot of people using that to run their business, to rank it even higher. So even in the context of what you guys might be doing. So there's also this guy called Ryan Lewis. I think WebRiz is his alias, and he's not well known at all. But this guy is really, really good at SEO, and with his team, they also did this website called Laces Up, which is, they just sell shoelaces, man. But it's still in the garments industry, in the textile. So they write these really beautiful posts that are super long, and they actually outrank big websites, and that's how they make their sales. So it's a really cool technique. So this was our goal with the articles. We're still sticking to this long form content. We usually don't post anything below 2,000 words, and our goal is to produce really high quality articles. And now we have no set frequency. We might post something like once a month or once every 8 weeks or 6 weeks, just because we're focusing so much on video and all these side projects that we have right now. But with video is a different thing. We actually have 3 videos per week on YouTube, and 1 live stream that goes for an hour, usually more than an hour and 15 minutes. So our schedule is like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Sunday. So you have a huge chunk in the midweek where people usually don't go out, they're home, they're watching YouTube after work. And then Friday, Saturday, obviously off because people are enjoying their free time. And Sunday again, because people are getting ready for the work week. They usually want to just Netflix and chill, so YouTube and chill, whatever. So we upload a video there at that day as well.
And you mentioned that you guys are working on a few products. How do you go about managing and distributing your time between those different kinds of product development?
Yeah, so basically, what we do is we don't focus too much time on developing. So what we actually like to do is take our time to find a person or a business that is trustworthy, and we invest in relationships. We want to outsource as much as possible, take care of just distribution, branding, digital content, because that's something we can do. That's something we have experience with. So we outsource as much as possible. We won't go into the factory to see how our product is made. We just want an end product. We want it to be good. We want it to be ready to be sold. And if you're ready to pay a premium and have really small margin to ourselves, but not waste time, because time is our most important asset. And then we invest in people that, again, are trustworthy, that we can have a good relationship with, because I don't want to work with someone and then having to change my business model and my channels after 2 months. That just sucks. And this is hard to do in Bulgaria for numerous reasons that I won't get into. But I would say that we prefer working with small companies because they see the opportunity to grow with us. So Ricardo, we're not the same company, but we do work as a team. We go out, we have meetings, we discuss it as a team. And it's really cool. And that's basically what we've been doing with our training gear. So this training gear includes the microplates, our t-shirts that are just basic t-shirts. It's not something that, you know, is super high tech or will help you in any way. It's just fan merch. But we're also working on some really cool stuff that's actually not been done, or at least is super expensive in Europe. It's cuffs that occlude your limbs so that you can train with a lower intensity. So instead of, let's say, doing biceps curls with 20 kilos for 8 reps, you would put these straps, occlude your muscle to a certain degree, and then work with an intensity between 30 and 50% of your maximum, and do 30 reps, and then rest for 30 seconds, do 15 more. And this sort of occlusion training is no joke. You know, when people see me do it, I use these bands that people used to squat with, and people look at me as if I'm, you know, intentionally trying to get a huge pump just because I'm a bro and I like to look at my veins. But it's actually a technique that's not been invented by pros. It's been invented by researchers in a lab. And the goal is to get the same training effect that you would with a higher load, but instead you can use a low load. And this is not only, sparing to your joints and connective tissue, it's also something that you can recover from really easily. So it's a great, great, great technique to introduce to your workout routine, either for diversity or just, especially when you're injured. It's an amazing tool. But this is something that I think you can only find in the northern part of Europe. And it's super expensive because, you know, to make a product in Norway, it's quite more expensive than to make it in Bulgaria. So we will try to introduce this product. So this is part of our training gear, let's say, portfolio. And we don't want to focus on, you know, me too products that I would say most of the people are doing, like bands. Although we might include those, but still we want to do a few products, but those that, you know, are missing. We want to fill those gaps. They might not be big, they might be small, but we're just doing it because someone needs to do it again. That might seem like we're heroes, but it's not my intention, you know. It's just something we thought it would be cool to do.
It's a useful product, yeah.
It's super convenient for people who are training at home as well. Because I personally, I train at home. I have a set of dumbbells, power blocks. It's super easy. It's a little bit loaded. I have my training gear here as well. So basically looking for convenience and saving all this time, instead of going to the gym, I prefer to just go into my living room or a special room where I have my gym and do it there. And of course, at home, you're limited by the weights that you can have. So you have to get more creative with equipment, also with exercises. So something like this is definitely really, really interesting.
Instead of squatting 100 kilos at home, you can just go with 30, but absolutely get destroyed with this technique, you know. It's actually super painful. Most people think it's easy. It's super painful, but just because of the blood flow. And I think that's for our training gear. But then with our protein bars, we're not involved even to this extent. We just went to a place that is owned by a person we really trust, we really like to work with, and we told them, look, this is the concept. We did some background research. We know what people want. We know what our followers want, because this is not a mass product. It's just for, you know, people that follow us. We want to provide them with the best protein bar, make it happen. And literally, we had no other communication, and we just received the bars. We tasted them. We said, this is amazing. What are the, you know, the nutritional values, the pricing, everything? This works. Okay, we're doing it. And from that point on, we have no involvement. We just receive a product that's ready to be shipped. It has the logo of our brand, everything. And we will just get it and transport it to the customer. So we probably won't have anything on stock. It will be like a drop shipping thing. Yeah. It's just that we'll produce all the content to get people involved, to educate them why this is better, because it has no, you know, conservative sweeteners, stabilizers, artificial flavorings, stuff like that. Although I'm not scared by those. I just want this product to be really, really tasty. And if you go all natural, it actually tastes better. And it's not chewy like gum.
Mm-hmm. Can you go, because I know we found a lot of advantages kind of going back home and producing that. Can you maybe touch, because you have a range of products, so you're talking to multiple manufacturers, about the benefits of kind of basing the production, and what are the nice things you found in doing that in Bulgaria as well?
I would say the strongest and most compelling reason is that it's just super cheap. And especially in the garment industry where you guys are located at, you can get some really high quality stuff and products for quite a low price, which gives you an advantage because you can let it just flood the market with a really good product that is not as expensive. And that's what we found with our microplates. It's a factory produces them for us that is actually producing elements for Bombardier's engines, you know, for Boeing engines. And you know, they're doing some really, really advanced stuff for ships and everything. I don't even know how they agreed to work for us, but, you know, I don't complain. So the end product is actually really, really good. It's really high quality. Like, the deviation in terms of grams of our products is super low. But yet, you know, the price is maybe a quarter of what it would cost to get it produced in Germany, for example, which is still a cheap place to produce, you know, at least when you compare it to Northern Europe. I would say this is probably the only advantage. I'm not sure that there's other advantages. You know, trying to go against the bureaucracy everywhere sucks, but I just think Bulgaria is far off behind other countries. In Estonia, for example, I can just go online and create my own company. I'm pretty sure laws are relaxed. Even I was talking with my dad a few days ago, and he's currently in Switzerland. So he told me, you know, here, if you want to produce something, you don't need to get it registered and checked by 1,000 agencies. You just say, this is my product. This is what it does. This is what it has. And you can immediately start selling it. But if someone checks it and sees that you're wrong, you're going to a bad place. You know, bad stuff's happening. You know, you're never going to sell anything in Switzerland again. So we better not lie. You know, that's the concept. It's not immediately trying to, you know, make it more difficult for you to produce something. It's just, okay, you can do anything you like, but just so you know, if you screw up, you're going to get, you know, in a world of trouble. And in Bulgaria, it's the opposite. It's really, I would say even accounting is sanction-based. Everything, if you don't do something, you're getting sanctioned. If you miss this deadline, you're getting sanctioned. There's huge sanctions even for small businesses. Even if your company is not doing absolutely anything, you can get sanctioned in a thousand ways. And I think this is normal. There's other accounting systems that work in the same way. But it's just that the nature of the business here, as you guys know, is such that usually the small players will pay the price, the bigger players who kind of get, you know, as we like to call, between the raindrops. I would say there's more disadvantages, yeah. Still, the level of education of the people we're going to work with is usually super low. They're really narrow-minded. They have a myopic view of everything, so they want to get money tomorrow. They don't realize the time value of relationships, of, you know, investing in the future. There's so many things that I would like to change, but it's just not going to happen. So I would say, as much as price, which is a really compelling reason, is a huge advantage, you'd have to hustle a lot more harder to get stuff done. In the garments industry as well, just because you're making some really cool clothes. We talked with you guys about it. You know, we're also doing a lifestyle brand that we're not talking much about, but you know, for this type of thing, to get someone to produce something for you is really a pain. You have to go through 1,000 different sellers, and usually they don't have what you're looking for, or if they do have it, they don't want to, you know, send you an invoice for it, so you can't really prove that you've bought this thing through your company. There's just so many shenanigans that's going on that it's really difficult. It's probably because the market is small and the big players work usually for Western Europe. So you have to work with smaller local dealers that they're really myopic. Because the market is so small, they're not that well developed. So if you go in the US, I'm pretty sure every producer will open this huge cartel with a tons of different materials, and they'll tell you, we have these colors with this fabric, with this everything, we can do this in, you know, 3 days. And here, if you go, people just start rolling their eyes. They don't want to do absolutely anything to help support your business. So what we try to do is work with younger people that have started recently, that are more open-minded. You know, these are the type of people that you can actually build a long-lasting relationship. And usually they charge more, and sometimes it's even more expensive than producing somewhere else in Europe, but it's still better than going through all this hassle. I don't know if that makes any sense. I don't know what your experience is with these sort of things, because I know you guys traveled a lot in Bulgaria to find some connections for your business.
Yeah, I think, the advantages and disadvantages, I think you pretty much covered them. But I think many people are making the mistake of producing and then just going for the Bulgarian market, and then it doesn't really make sense, because why are you limiting yourself only to the Bulgarian market when it's a product that could be sold in Europe or even bigger market? So yeah, I think you guys have the same mindset. We also not aiming for Bulgaria to be the main market, of course. If someone can make use of our products in Bulgaria, that's absolutely fine. But I think it's just using the advantages and then going for the bigger market makes more sense to me.
And when meeting manufacturers, especially, I remember, I think there were two types, like the negative responses we got for two reasons, I think, at least from my impression was, first, when people were scared from the new thing we were showing them or asking them to do. The second one was, I think they had a certain amount of work for existing work, and they were quite happy to just continue with it and don't do something else. So they weren't really looking for scaling or for other opportunities.
Zero ambition. They would say, we have a bunch of orders and we can, you know, make whatever you guys want in 3 months because now we're in season. And I'm like, cool.
Yeah.
Bye.
But anyway, I know you're pressed in time and I would like to finish us on a like a nice positive note as well on that, because you're actually decided to base it there. And we know also from experience that there are some a lot of positives coming from that. What drives you to go forward with all these several ventures that you guys are doing?
Well, I think to most of the people that will listen to this podcast, it might seem that we don't have a clear direction. And I would say that they're totally right. And I think this is something that every young company, every young venture goes through. So we're still trying to sort everything out, basically. But what's been the main driver, I would say the most important thing, is that we just want to provide value to people in any way. I'm not going to lie, it's super egoistical. I want to make cool things and then have people like them. This is not a bad reason, you know? I want to produce stuff that hasn't been done, but it also must be valuable. So for us, it's always about listening to what our audience has to say and then giving them what they want. So this is because we have the luxury of having probably around 30,000 followers across all of our platforms that are really passionate about everything we do. So we can make a lot of things and sell them. We can buy cheap stuff from AliExpress and then, you know, resell them for a huge margin. But that's not, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. I think none of us would. You want to dig deep, ask what people want, what their pain is, and try to solve it, and try to do it locally. And even if it's, you know, more expensive for us, even if it's a huge hassle, you want to give a good value for, you know, the price that you would pay. And that is maybe still sounds like not a huge motivator, but I would say something else. For me, I want to develop a business, you know, an international business that is big enough to employ a lot of people that will really enjoy working at that place. We want to make a huge, well, not huge, but our small community of people that we work with. They're not our employees. We're all working together. We're having, you know, fun. We have a fulfilling job. We're doing cool. We're working on cool projects that we would want to work on. We can provide them with, you know, a salary that will allow them to live happy lives and provide for their families. Mm. For me, that's kind of, you know, fulfilling my social duty, because people always say that, you know, youngsters, we're the ones that should change the system, and there's always the talk about the system and thing. But you know, I wouldn't say that I am political enough to change it in a way of going out to protest, but I'm pretty sure I can impact it in another way by providing jobs, by just producing this company that does cool things that people really enjoy working at, and I can provide for, by extension of family, for like 200 people. That would be awesome. I don't know if that makes more sense than what I said previously.
It makes total sense.
Completely,
it's,
yeah.
Basically, very similar to what our motivation is for the things we want to do, especially the value part. This is so incremental.
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah, it's not about money. People don't realize, you know, when you're doing a business, you don't want to make huge money because of the huge money. This is just the ambition of every person to create a product that grows, that reaches more people. And by extension, of course, you need to have, you know, larger operations. But, you know, after a certain point for everyone, money doesn't get you any more happy. It's fulfillment. And what I found fulfillment in is just growing something from nothing. I remember our first sales was, even for coaching, for t-shirts, it was so exciting. This is just a rush of adrenaline like no other. So
yeah, right.
You guys know what I'm talking about, but that's basically it. I just enjoy the process. I can't stay in one place. I need to move. I need to develop. That's why, you know, I'm competing in powerlifting. I'm competing in bodybuilding. I'm competing in a bunch of things, even though I have no chances of winning, but I'm just doing it because I love it.
It's about the process, yeah.
It's all about the process.
Yeah.
You said it right.
I think
it's not about the end goal, it is about the process.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, we can talk so much more, especially about your personal interests. You mentioned powerlifting, but I know you're pressed on time. We can wrap this up now.
Wrap this up. We'll definitely do part two sometime in the future.
Part two.
Oh, count me in whenever you guys want to talk.
We'll do.
When you don't, when you guys have a void to fill with a guest, just call me.
Okay, man. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Cool.
Yeah, I think that about wraps it up.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for coming over. Say hi to Stan as well. Next time, bring him on as well.
Oh, well, definitely.
Cool. Thanks,
Steph. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.